Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's that time.
What time?
High time to say if you've got time to give this time your time, then it's time to let this time spend time making your time a good time on this time.
Monkey Tennis, please, please, cook your eggs. Be safe. Be egg safe. Monkey Tennis,
have a glass of water, please.
It falls to me to say he is gone. Monkey Tennis, I said I'd find out more. I haven't done that.
Pay for dinner, yeah?
Monkey Tennis,
I said, who the hell is that?
That's merely a shaved boy in a wig. Monkey Tennis,
there is broad agreement that John was good. Tommy, join me at the lady.
The show that promises to be all things
to all men
and all women
and everything in between.
Monkey Tennis,
there's a subtle cock up there.
Hello everyone and welcome to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast, where we're doing a deep dive into each episode of this time series 2. I'm Adam Brooks and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
There was an initial hesitancy about coming back to the Beeb after Emily Maitlis made Prince Andrew get a bit muddled up.
Nick Alder.
The truth? You can't handle the truth.
And Tom Stav.
Basically, if you've got traditional values on intimacy, you might want to pop the kettle on.
So we're going to be getting straight to the meat of the episode this week, starting with a very pivotal chat about the royal family with producer Howard. Presumably producer Howard is the E4 new producer, isn't he? That's the guy.
Yes. And okay. I don't know if anyone clocked where he's from. I was able to do this with the use of mine eye rather than IMDb.
Go on.
He is in, I'll give you a clue, Father Ted.
Is that the clue or the answer?
He isn't Father Ted, so that is a clue. He's a character in Father Ted. You're still okay, you're looking at me blank faced, I'll tell you. It's Bishop Brennan's sarcastic sort of, I don't know if he's a father or what he exactly is, but he's when Bishop Brennan comes over, he's got that chap with him who's incredibly sarcastic.
He's the sort of Dougal counterpart, isn't he?
yes,
amazing.
But he's like super sarcastic.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, there was an IMDb bombshell that I noticed. I can't now remember. I think this is one of the actors that plays like a floor manager, so not Howard the producer that Alan talks to a lot in this series, but I think one of the floor managers in series one, not 100% sure if we've seen him in this series, was one of the main guys in Reservoir Dogs.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, he's in one of the Mr. What? Pink, Mr. Brown, whatever, what? I can't quite remember.
That's bizarre.
So I guess one of the ones that gets killed quite early and you don't see a lot of.
Who wants to run us through Alan's royal liaison?
Well, I quite like how this has kind of come to be. So Alan was the plus one of Grant Shapps, whose wife was annoyed because they'd agreed to go veggie for a month, and then she found a receipt for Byron Burger, which is just a lovely level of detail about someone in the Conservative Party, which is absolutely brilliant.
Something about Grant Shapps, because he gets mentioned a couple of times in this episode. You know the Conan podcast episode we talked about a few weeks ago?
Mm.
I'm sure in that interview, Coogan talked about the Partridge writing team not liking to use political people as reference points because they felt like it would date it. Whereas I feel there are some quite explicit kind of political reference points in this episode. So I just thought that was quite an interesting contradiction there. Was it in that Conan thing, or was that from something else?
Yeah, it was. He definitely talks about reference points, because we mentioned this on last week's episode as well about Hamilton and Lewis Hamilton being fairly safe bets that wouldn't date. But Grant Shapps, shakier ground.
Will Grant Shapps stand the test of time? That's what we're asking.
We do not know.
We quoted it in our introductions today, but there's a nice bit where apparently Princess Anne, she may want to be on this time, but there is sort of reluctance after Emily Maitlis made Prince Andrew get a bit muddled up, which is not just a great line, but also a nice callback to Emily Maitlis' real life appearance in Series 1. So that was a lot of fun.
I think as well, just Prince Andrew getting a bit muddled up was a very, very nice turn of phrase there.
Yeah. Well, I think obviously we know from the last episode of Mid-Morning Matters Series 2, I think, the royal episode, we know Alan is a staunch royalist, so he would find any kind of way to kind of minimalise or trivialise the kind of accusations around Prince Andrew in order to save face for the monarchy.
It's benefit of the doubt, isn't it, basically?
Yeah.
And he's had the Duchess of Stranraer on Naomi knowing you as well.
Exactly.
Can't say Stranraer without somebody doing that.
I also like this. I like the narrative plot point in that undeniably getting a member of the royal family on this time is such a huge coup that even a producer that's trying to steer it in more of an E4 BBC3 direction wouldn't be able to turn it down. And so it's almost like wrestling the show back into Alan's direction rather than the direction it was going in.
One query here, though, because Alan says to him, you could be the producer that pulled off a royal coup, not the producer of a show where the lighting man fell to his death.
Mm.
So that did make me wonder, is this the new producer or is this maybe an outgoing producer?
Yeah, it's a good point, actually, isn't it? I hadn't considered that. This could be
possibly.
We're going too deep into this because we're not even a minute into the show at this point. But,
I mean, I took that to mean that this is the guy who's come from E4. Perhaps that's the reason he left E4, was that a lighting man fell to his death. But I think this is more, this is the new producer, but he's got a checkered past that he's trying to move away from.
I don't know, getting a job from E4 up into the BBC, having been responsible for someone's death, potentially.
Well, we're living in the APU where it was no barrier to Alan getting back on
the interview. So you've talked about your strengths. What are your weaknesses? someone died on my set.
it may, of course, also just mean that a lighting man fell to his death on the show, not necessarily that it's that producer's fault. It's more of an associated this type of thing. Anyway, like I say, we're not even a minute into the programme, so we'll probably move on.
We'll move on. I did enjoy, so we have a steel drum introduction. I don't know if anyone noticed yet, Alan's dancing, but he's kind of grabbing. If you look at his hands, he's sort of grabbing.
He's got this awkward
grab, and what is brilliant, and obviously we'll come to this as we go further through the episode, Jenny is rooted to her seat as Alan. Alan stood up dancing.
My notes just say that there's an extremely strong Theresa May Tory party conference vibe about the way Alan's dancing here.
You've nailed that.
I love his attempts to get Simon involved as well. Simon knows better than to be drawn down this road. He's doing absolutely minimal hip movements over the digiwall.
Yeah.
I think, don't you hear Alan say to Jenny, I thought you were going to get up as well.
Yeah. I think that comes a bit later, but yeah. We're probably like 90 seconds, 2 minutes in, and we've already had a reference to Savile as well. So he's like, how about that? How about that? How's about that?
Yeah. the look on his face when he does that, it's the panic.
There's a generation of men that will do that impression out of muscle memory before they remember the implications. Yes. That's what's happened, isn't it?
Yeah. Also, isn't this pretty much the same thing happens in Mid-Morning Matters Series 2? He does an accidental Savile as well.
Yes.
That's when he does an impression of a car alarm or something.
Yeah.
Just a Jimmy Savile then.
I got quite confused about Alan's overnight plans. So he saw this band when he stayed overnight in Camden for fun.
Yes, can I just stop you there? Go on. What does that mean? Like staying overnight in Camden for fun?
There was something in that. I wondered if it was an after work romance.
Maybe, but Alan
I think
Partridge
some kind of dirty liaison is what the implication is. Either that, or he's drinking WKDs down at Camden Ice Wharf.
We've all done that. But also, it's a nightly show, presumably. So, and we know that he gets a car home with Lynn, whether she drives or not. So, are we to believe that he normally returns back to the Oast House in East Anglia every night, but that occasionally, for fun, he'll stay overnight in Camden and not bother to return home? I guess
possibly.
That's it.
Either way,
like that's one of those things in the APU where it just doesn't really scan and you have to kind of let it go. Because in reality, well, not reality, but he wouldn't be going to and from London and the Oast House in Norfolk like five nights a week, surely. I just don't think that would be... what he'd be doing.
Either way, the goal in here is that the band were keeping him up. He told them to keep the noise down. They refused. Alan threatened to call the council. They said, "Go on then." So he starts filming them on his phone. And it's at that point that you know he enjoys their performance of Sunsplash, and then they get invited onto the show.
In his words, the sound went from an abrasive clang clang pang to a more agreeable diddly pom pang, which is a crucial distinction. I didn't realise until this point that the theme to this time was called Sunsplash. I did try and look it up on Spotify, obviously. There are a few. I found a reggae Sunsplash.
There are over 30. I went through them all. I don't know why I bothered.
I found a reggae Sunsplash on Spotify from Ninja Man. Would you like some fun facts about Ninja Man?
Some fun facts about Ninja Man.
Desmond John Ballantyne, better known as Ninja Man and sometimes as Don Gorgon, is a popular Jamaican dancehall DJ and actor, known for his controversial and pro-gun lyrics and his stuttering and melodramatic style. In 2017, he received a life sentence for murder.
Lovely stuff.
Did anybody clock Alan's, I think, fairly subtle racism, where he basically has to double check that the band didn't steal the oil cans for their drums?
He doesn't say it
outright, but it's just bubbling below the surface there.
It's the drums have been discarded when you acquired them, haven't they? just have to check.
And then of course Simon's teeing up a great joke here, which Alan absolutely destroys in Railroads.
I didn't see it coming. The punchline. Did everyone see that before it, you know, was kind of delivered? I must admit, it feels like a joke that, you know, it's like a playground joke that you've heard a million times, but...
I wasn't familiar with it.
Fresh to me as well. I quite enjoyed it. Not only did Alan spoil it, but he also basically called it rubbish by saying, and I'm sure there'll be more good jokes from Simon later on tonight.
So we're celebrating Britain's greatest war heroes and unsung heroes as we go to Private Denton at the Digiwall.
Don't worry, guys. I can tell you how many steps. 12 this week.
We find out that Simon's got brittle bones, which Alan's found out after he's had access to his medical records.
Yeah, literally joking about it with a BBC doctor, which seems massively unprofessional. Yeah.
So are we to believe that Simon and Alan go to the doctors together?
I think it was a medical checkup sanctioned by the BBC for the show.
I think it was
making sure they're okay to do stunts, etc.
Yeah.
Sticks in the 60s.
So are we going to gloss over the Nazi salute?
Well, I mean, like, we're about, what, 2 minutes into the actual show
We're 4 minutes into the show. We've had a Nazi salute, nearly a second Nazi salute, and a Jimmy Savile impression. I would say fair play to Coogan and the Gibbons for pushing the boundaries of these gags, but also fair play to the BBC for actually letting them get away with it.
I mean, the thing is, like, it's not exactly edgy comedy, is it? Like, a Nazi salute and doing a Jimmy Savile impression in 2021 isn't exactly sort of, you know, like, ooh, like, I can't believe they got... Like, it's a bit old hat, isn't it? It's not exactly the most cutting edge of acerbic comedy, is it?
I think... When it's 9:30 on BBC One, I think it is quite bold of the BBC to say, yeah, we're going to stand by you and let you make these gags. Obviously, the context of them makes sense in terms of, you know, they aren't racist or whatever. It's just kind of the joke is around like just the accidental idiocy. But I still think the BBC, you know, the BBC commissioner putting a ticker across in a box to say, yes, you can make those jokes, I think is quite bold by the BBC to go for that.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I think it's an interesting one because I don't think they add huge amounts to the comedy themselves. They're not overtly funny, but they are kind of like Partridge isms, where he will just accidentally find himself suddenly doing a Savile impersonation, and just, you know, accidentally kind of, most people wouldn't even reference the fact they just made a Nazi salute. You kind of like downplay it, but Alan calls himself out on these things.
That's where the jokes lie. It isn't, doing a Nazi salute isn't funny. The fact he nearly did it and then referenced it and made it more of a thing than it needed to be is what's funny. And I think the Savile thing is hilarious because it's accidental, and the way he reacts to it is what makes that funny. But I think that the layer where I'm saying, like, the BBC are putting themselves open to criticism by letting them keep gags like that in the script, because some viewers won't get the nuance of why those jokes are the jokes that they are. Do you see what I mean? Yeah. And that is what I'm saying is quite bold.
Yes, what's also bold is the generosity of a Liverpudlian businessman who has said that he will donate a kidney machine if Simon can sneak 12 Queen references into his segment.
Here's a question. How long did it take each of you to work out that's what was going on?
I think it was the second or third reference. As soon as the bell rang, I knew he was trying to do something under the radar. But it took a few before I knew it was Queen songs.
I think it's Radio Gaga for me.
Yeah, how many does it take for Alan to get, though?
it's about eight. Seven or eight. I like that Alan immediately is kind of saying, doing a charity appeal in a war section would be an editorial decision. And I wondered if that might be because he's just come from a Help for Heroes benefit where he could have offered that as a bit of sort of leverage for brand Partridge, but clearly didn't or didn't feel comfortable. And meanwhile, Simon's just gone ahead and made it happen. Help for Heroes benefit would arguably been a lot more fitting in a war section than what is this? It's for a dialysis machine or something, isn't it? Yeah.
Hmm.
So it's more that it's a missed opportunity for Alan, and he's quite bitter about it, I think.
Did you guys spot the mini Alan on the map here?
No.
So it's basically in the I'd have to try and describe this in audio form. Basically, in the style of that Your Country Needs You, like, pointing army recruitment poster. Right. So Alan's got like a little kind of like cap on and he's pointing like that.
Brilliant.
So I think it's referred to as the Lord Kitchener Wants You poster. If you look at that, so there's little tiny Alans on the map of that style, which I thought was quite a nice little gag, which isn't immediate.
Just before Lynn enters for the first time this episode, I thought it was notable that Alan claims Britain's got a drug problem, but crucially the problem needs to sort itself out, which, to be fair to him, is a solution I've never heard suggested before. Just let the problem sort itself out. And then here's Lynn with some great / terrible news.
So is this the bombshell that she's overheard Jenny's PA say that Jenny and Sam have split up?
Yes, although I like Alan's guesswork before she gets to that, where he says, you look chuffed. Have you finished another word search book? Yeah. She's like, better than that. Not the big jigsaw.
So good. Yeah.
Oh, and also when she says, sorry, when she says, what's been keeping you up at night? And he's like, well, the owl.
Yeah. has anyone got a note of how generous Alan is towards Lynn at this point?
Yes, but go on. Yeah.
It's basically Saturday afternoon off, which he then kind of almost instantaneously downplays, was like, but I will need you back by 4 o'clock. It's on a Saturday, back by 4 o'clock.
Yeah, the three-pronged reveal that she already works all the Saturdays, that she's only been given a half day, and then he needs her back by four. It's a lovely triple threat. Yeah.
He's basically has literally given her 4 hours off for delivering good news on a weekend.
Thanks, Lynn.
I was just gonna say I just absolutely love this sequence, much like with last week. I love seeing these two together, particularly in moments like this when they're kind of being conspiratorial and united against the people they see as Alan's enemies. So I just think, so far in the series, these bits with Lynn have been so fleeting but so good. It's like just the way they interact with each other, I think, is fantastic.
It's really wonderful, isn't it? And it's basically her either dispatching good or bad news, and Alan's reactions to either is hilarious. But I do love his giddiness when he gets something that goes his way, because it's so rare, but also he's so explicit about it. So in this one, it's get lost, Lynn, I am now in a very, very good mood. And that really reminded me of there's an episode in series one where he comes on and he's like, bah, 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 bah. Yeah. I'm in a good mood.
It's also a bit like things like Chris Feather. He likes me and stuff like that, isn't it? Like the reaction to good news. It's great.
Yeah, it's time for Alan to put on his sensitive face and go and have a chat to Jenny before they're back on air. I love his guesswork as to why the breakups happened.
What did he do? Kiss your best friend. Was it the chat lines?
Yeah, the chat lines.
It's 2021.
I missed the chat lines bit. That was great.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that Alan kind of reinforces how unsuitable Sam is in three key ways. One, his eyes are too thin. Two, Etonians aren't modest. And I thought that's also a nice little Coogan yes, Alan no reference at the expense of other famous Etonians. And also, basically, I think there's also a thing where he's just reinforcing like how upper class Sam is, because at the end he calls him Samuel Peregrine Ptolemy Chatwin. So I think just really ramming that home with Jenny, because I think that's maybe a bit of a bone of contention between the two of them already.
I thought it was interesting as well that there's a real noticeable break here from Jenny's presenting voice and demeanour. Like, everything else, on or off air, there's a level of professionalism, and here it feels like you're getting the real her for the first time.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a really good spot. And again, I think it's kind of kudos to Susanna Fielding's brilliant acting throughout this series. And I mean, you know, we saw how brilliant she was in the first series, but yeah, just the way she interacts with Alan is kind of so believable, and it is kind of like switching on that presenter mode and switching it off. Yeah, I think we haven't really talked much about how great she is as an actress in this series so far, but she's fantastic, I think.
So we're on the sofa ever so briefly, taking views from viewers about tackling drugs. They've had the full gamut of responses, from mandatory door-to-door drug tests to school visits from Shane McGowan. I quite like the viewers of this time. I think they've got quite a good sense of humour.
Do you think this is kind of this is where they're kind of mocking, I guess, the way that modern TV has been kind of democratised with the nature of vox pops and light chat shows like this? So it's almost, yeah, you know, when they like, oh, send us in your photos of the weather, that sort of thing. And it also reminded me of just in my head was Speak Your Brain.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it Speak Your Brain?
Yeah.
It's absolutely.
What is it? The letter of the law? What is it? J.
Yeah. It's absolutely that kind of, yeah, any shit opinions will be kind of tolerated and amplified because we need content.
And validated by being broadcast on BBC One, basically, yeah.
Yeah. And so they briefly refer to Janet Dignan, who's written in to complain that they've been using too many split infinitives. It's a basic joke, but it works. Alan then goes on to use four in a row, including a really messy one at the end that barely makes any sense.
Oh, can we go through the list? Because I think I've got five here.
Oh, it might be five. You go for it. I don't have the list with me.
But I would say that for me, this was a bit of an educational journey, because I wasn't 100% sure what a split infinitive meant.
Same.
So I did have to double check it. So then, like, listening to it, it was like, right, okay, so to truly have it out, to never have again, to hopefully find out, to thereby put, and then the last one, which is very mangled, to in some small way help. So I think there are five in a row that he does.
Brilliant.
I had to educate myself on basic English there.
Grammatical pedantry is sometimes where lots of the humour lies. This isn't, they'll often kind of play with grammatical gags throughout Partridge, which I'm always here for.
Although I thought there was one interesting point. He seems quite annoyed about this, where I would say it'd be more consistent with the character that he's on board with this.
Yeah, you're right, actually. I hadn't really thought of that, but he's often correcting other people on their grammar rather than taking on criticism from other people.
I suspect that he fully understands the issue. He doesn't think it's a big deal, and so he's using his own grammatical knowledge to deliberately wind her up by putting five in a row.
Yes, I think that's exactly
that must be it.
We've solved it. It's that.
Well, I think also reading about it, I think there are basically two schools of thought on whether split infinitives are bad or good. So yes. I think, opposing views.
Yeah, exactly that.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of detective work, Tiff is on the scene talking about the prospect of her and Alan as a detective duo. Although first she says that she spots he's been going to the gym. This is slightly confusing, takes a bit of working out here, because she saw his trunks drying on the radiator. So firstly, he's drying his trunks on radiators around the BBC. That's gross. or in his dressing room, which is still bad. Secondly, trunks in a gym. Presumably there's a pool, and does this mean he can now swim competently? Because we know he struggled in the past.
It doesn't mean he can swim competently, means he can get in a swimming pool.
Also, I know that she probably means this is a flirty compliment, but if you can only tell that he's been going to the gym from the trunks being on the radiator, not his physique, then surely that tells you something as well.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I don't think she is flirting. Well, badly flirting because she's buttering him up for some reason. Some nefarious reason.
You're determined that Tiff has purely got a sinister
I don't trust her. I don't trust her, Tom. Don't trust her one bit.
Why can't she just like Alan for the man that he...
Is it because you saw her in that documentary where she was a vampire? Has that made you not trust her?
Yeah, that's it. This is a crossover, isn't it?
So Alan says he could do with an extra pair of eyes because Linda's going milky, which made me feel really sad. And so then they're kind of cooking up names for detective duos that they could be. She offers him a powder and comb. He mistakes that for the name of Detective Geo. It's all very straightforward. But I did like that he imagines Anna Friel as playing D.I. Beth Combe, because Anna Friel did play Beth in Brookside.
Ah, God, nice. I would never have remembered that.
No.
Oh, I had to look it up.
Is it time to talk chemsex?
Almost, and far be it from me to delay a section on chemsex, but I did like that for Alan to remind himself of this detective idea, he writes it down with her eyeliner, but clearly what ends up happening is he's written ITV in massive letters on his BBC call sheet, which is bound to ring some alarm bells.
And the fact that she doesn't take it away and he has to leave it on the sofa as well, because he does a double take, because she has to scuttle away, and he's left with the pad with ITV that he just leaves on the sofa next to him.
Oh, you know what? That could have been there could have been a fun payoff there with somebody finding his call sheet with ITV written on it. Like, he could have got in trouble somehow, or people think he's trying to get a job at ITV. Don't know. But that didn't transpire.
He's never going to work at ITV. Be real.
Maybe they've made him an offer he can't refuse. I mean, they haven't. It doesn't matter. Chemsex. Let's talk about it.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I thoroughly enjoyed the idea of a magazine style show like The One Show, or This Time, discussing chemsex. That in and of itself I thought was brilliant. And Alan's kind of like very short introduction film where you kind of see him like gazing around, I also really enjoyed. And then his explanation of chemsex, where he has to draw it in chalk on the floor through the medium of a Venn diagram, where essentially saying there are two things that kind of work well together, and he has to give us a list of five other things that work well together, just to really kind of super like labour that point as to what, you know, what chemsex actually is and what it means.
So Alan, that one of those things is Charles and Camilla rather than Diana as well. Love that.
Yeah, and yawning and scratching.
Yep, brilliant. I also like, just before that, when they're talking about that this is part of a kind of continuing series of exposés where they go into kind of the seedy underworld of whatever. But the other examples they've got are that Jenny went after an unlicensed market stall, which sounds like barely a story at all. And next week, I think it would have been the other way around. Chemsex would have been next week, but because they're still getting Alan's expose of bare knuckle boxing amongst the Irish traveller community subtitled, that's had to wait until next week. And so chemsex has been brought forward.
That's a gag. That subtitles gag went over my head as well. I didn't like that. That is brilliant.
I like that. I like that a lot. I also like the fact that when Alan is describing other the drugs used for chemsex parties, it says ketamine and it's a picture of a dead horse is the reference.
Yes.
Yeah. And I really enjoyed in the voiceover when he's wandering around Soho that they say, add some reverb and slow-mo and its sinister side soon becomes apparent, like making fun of the way that shows like slow down the footage and make it black and white.
Oh, but that's exactly like the black and white zooming thing on Joe Beasley and Cheeky Monkey, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's exactly what they did in episode two. Before we delve into the content of this VT piece, I was going to say, much like Nick, I really enjoyed the concept of quite a light magazine show covering a topic such as chemsex because it's so inappropriate. But for me, I thought there was a nice gag where the way Alan was teeing this up, I thought, okay, this is going to be one of those VTs they talk about, but they don't show, and then they cut away to whatever's happening in the studio. So I was actually really surprised that this was one of the actual VTs that existed.
Two little things, again, just before we dive in, so to speak, is the chemsex bubble writing I enjoyed as well. And
yes. And that he signed it.
That he signed it at the bottom as well. Yeah. Very, very good. And also, Steve is very good at drawing circles freehand. Yes.
Is it time to meet Dr. Raj? I'm just a pharmacist, Prasad.
Yes.
Great. Yes, a couple of maybe slightly silly things here. Alan tries to get Dr. Raj to describe it as meow meow because he likes to say that. And also the bit where Alan mistakes you're going to play guinea pig for thinking that that's like a gay sex term, I thought was a bit silly and a bit of an obvious gag.
Yeah, I think the exchange that he has here reminded me of when he tries to sort of discover what silence is at the monastery, like that interview that he has with kind of the spokesperson of the monastery. I thought was on a similar level to this, where it's quite funny, but it's borderline stupid, whereas a lot of the Alan humour is quite smart, but this is actually just a little bit daft. At least they're not above doing a wonky eye joke.
Yeah, I did feel in the APU that we've seen this before, haven't we? This kind of like, oh, I'm doing an experimental drug. Oh, it's had no effect. It clearly has. Like, that's, we've seen that before.
Yeah.
Well, I think this, the whole thing, because you have the party sequence that follows this, that felt very much like a retread of him doing an E in Scissor Dial, didn't it?
An ecstasy pellet.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you guys spot, you know, there's that large mirror that he puts his face through, like, towards the end of the Doctor sequence. I was going to say, I saw that on the side table. I was like, yeah, we're definitely going to get a big Alan face in that at some point. So that paid off.
He's then on to the party. He won't name the area he goes to in order to protect house prices, which I thought was very considerate of him. But I liked his style of really eliciting some honest responses from people by walking around going, BBC television, who here likes chemsex?
Well, this is also brilliant as well, where he just walks into the kitchen and starts to basically have a conversation with someone from Holistic Media that he met at some summer drinks. And rather than talk about chemsex, they kind of get bogged down into the practicalities of an FM license versus DAB, and the way that you kind of best keep a listener's attention in 2021. I thought this was brilliant, this bit.
I thought there's a nice bit of art imitating life all the other way around when he goes over to the guy from local radio and says, do I know you? And I think probably a lot of the audience are thinking that at the same moment. Presumably, we all recognised that this was Dan Skinner, a.k.a. Angelos Epithemu from Shooting Stars.
I was really hoping this was going to be one of the links to the Oast House, because I don't know if you remember, there's a bit in one of the Oast House episodes where Alan talks about how Lynn's nephew has just gotten into chemsex. So I was really hoping that this person that he met was going to end up being Lynn's nephew. Sadly not, but maybe he was at the party, but just not on screen.
It's kind of like, it's sort of over before it starts that scene, isn't it? Like, they obviously have the discussion and the exchange in the party, and then it cuts to them kind of, you know, on the top of a hill and talking the night away. But I was sort of expecting that to kind of go somewhere a little further than it did. It's over fairly quickly, and you know, it's obviously a small part and that's fine, but I thought there might be a bit more to it.
Yeah, I mean, were you expecting Alan to basically participate at some point?
Yeah, I sort of felt like, you know, even the sort of prison, as an example, like that prison one at the end had a bit of closure where he says, you know, the prison system is broadly fine and much like Nero Costa, blah, 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 blah. I felt like that scene kind of, it felt like quite rich territory for quite a lot of humour in the kind of idea of chemsex, and I don't think it felt like it was fully utilised. It started well, and I just thought it was over quite quickly, and I did expect a little bit more from that scene.
One thing to note that I should have checked, I haven't done that, but I do believe, my limited knowledge of radio licensing, that all of those Ofcom loopholes they mentioned are completely real.
Yeah.
And also, I thought it's a nice nod that they say, you know, only if you broadcast local news on the hour, which I thought was potentially a nice nod back to early days, Alan. Also thought, obviously, he talks about not being able to get much information out of people because of his style of saying BBC television, who here likes chemsex? But presumably he's also got an absolutely gigantic cameraman behind him too. So surely that's one of the reasons that no one's really talking.
Although I did really, really like this section. It's not, you know, laugh out loud hilarious like a lot of the VTs, but I just always like it when Alan finds a kindred spirit. So, you know, he obviously finds this guy who he can talk to on a really sort of detailed level about the ins and outs of local radio. It's always nice to see because, you know, Alan is often sort of pushed to the sidelines quite often when in scenes and things like that. But, yeah, it's nice when he finds a buddy, although, you know, he does hoof all his drugs and end up talking to him about the M25 or something like that on a hill until the early morning. But
yeah.
And whilst I won't keep in touch, but yeah, it's still nice when Alan finds someone that he can get on with and have a chat with, because, you know, he's quite lonely.
I would say it makes me wonder if there's anything on the cutting room floor from this, because like you were saying, it doesn't really go anywhere. Like, it feels like this whole sequence is over before it's started. So there isn't a great kind of punchline or a great narrative payoff, really.
Mm.
And again, just to... Not to wage more negativity on this, but again, for me, much like last week, it's a VT sequence that I just felt a bit disappointed in terms of, I think sometimes Alan goes off and does some kind of VT piece and it's layered with gags and it feels very worthwhile. This has felt a bit weak again.
Mm. Yep, I would agree.
So back on the sofa... Jenny's lip goes, I notice, at the line from Alan, London to Aberdeen with a permanent erection.
Yes, I noticed that as well, yeah.
Now,
it's just a vulgar way to drive. That's a great line.
This is probably the point, I think, in this series where I'm most likely to have missed the joke, but the bit about sheltering Jewish women in Putney. Did anyone else have any notes on this? I couldn't quite work out what the reference was.
Yeah, same.
Is he describing kidnapping? Because I think Alan's incredulous that this happened in Putney and that doesn't seem accurate. Or is it that the tweeter's dad just lied to sound like a hero? I wasn't quite sure whether this is a specific reference.
Yeah, you know what? I'm kind of with you. I wasn't 100% sure, but it's the thing about... Because you... There's obviously something to it because you hear Alan audibly say Putney, and it seems to be the reference to a basement that makes him really quizzy.
Yes.
I don't know if the joke is just because they're talking about sheltering in Putney in London, whereas should this be referenced like in Europe or something? I don't know. I feel like there is a bit of detail that we've missed.
If someone at home can fill us in.
Yes. Is there some kind of notorious kidnapper or criminal who kept Jewish women in a basement in Putney that we are completely oblivious to? Thepartridgepod@gmail.com. Please do fill us in whether the news is tragic or funny. also like that Alan agrees that giving out too many badges for heroism devalues the system. And his example of this is that he had to return his Blue Peter badge because a dog was given one. Question to the group. Anyone ever get a Blue Peter badge?
No, but we know you do.
I think Adam and Tom Dark are absolutely rife for Blue Peter badgery.
I got the green environmental one.
So did you actually set? I mean, absolute clang here, but I mean, I got
you've
mine
stolen
for...
one off set, have you? Are you tight with a dog?
Taken one off a dog's collar.
I wouldn't say stolen. Why have you said? I've not said stolen. Why have you said?
Have you not even done a good deed to earn your Blue Peter badge?
All right, I'll tell you the whole system. I'll tell you what I did, Adam, and I'll let you be the judge of if it's a good deed or not. I got Jason Derulo on Blue Peter. So,
Jesus Christ. And that's what they give a badge out for now, is it?
I mean, they'll literally give it to anyone. They devalued it.
I had to draw a poster about the water cycle. Unbelievable. I'm setting mine back.
Yeah, apparently just getting
mine is invalid.
Just getting a pop star on TV will get you one. Ridiculous.
his country.
Defund the BBC.
Yeah, I think what you need to do to right this wrong is you need to go and get Jason Derulo to restore a Victorian folly with 13 young offenders. Yes. It's the only way.
Now that is a TV show that I would like to see happen. Yeah. Commissioned.
But how old were they? Did anyone get how old they were?
13 years old.
Yeah, they're all 13. Yep.
The same age as Alan at the time.
So he's basically the patrol leader in that situation.
Yeah, it's a bit of a baffling one, though. I mean, it's funny in and of itself, but it did seem like an odd story that doesn't really have much context, just that he built a folly and somehow was able to get 20 young offenders to help him out. Like, there's no context to it. It's just out there, and then we've moved on from it.
Yeah, suddenly it's time for drama therapy with Izzy Barnes. Yeah, don't worry about that last bit.
It's another mention of Victorian Follies as well, which obviously also featured in the Oast House. So I do feel like there are definitely a few things in the ether in the writing room that have been carried through a couple of projects at the same time.
I mean, I'm sure we'll all agree and talk about it extensively, but this whole scene with Izzy Barnes is brilliant. I would kick things off by saying, obviously, Izzy Barnes is a voice coach. They, you know, talk about Margaret Thatcher, who, you know, had a voice coach. What I really like, though, is Izzy refers to her as Margaret Thatcher. Alan refers to her as Lady Thatcher. Much more revelry for old Maggie.
He does say that she goes from being the sort of woman who wouldn't let you have your ball back to the backdraft from a furnace. So
yes,
perhaps less respectful there.
Yes.
And Alan does know for a fact that Jacob Rees-Mogg had a poster of Lady Thatcher on his bedroom wall. Sorry, ceiling.
that's great. Yeah, that's a great. But also, the second kind of, well, I guess including Thatcher, the third overt reference to a politician in this episode, which Coogan said he wouldn't do.
I would say, I don't know about you guys, but I think this is possibly the weakest section of the entire series so far.
Are you kidding? I think this is the best.
Yeah, this drama bit does absolutely nothing for me, really.
The bit where Alan's acting, I love. The rest of it, I could take or leave.
Yeah, the bit that really made me laugh was the don't overthink it bit. That really made me laugh. But the rest of it didn't do very much for me.
I think there's quite a lot to dive into here, regardless. Yes.
I'll just say I'm with you on this, Stab, and actually, to back up more negativity from me, compared to episode 3, this is currently my least favourite of the series. So episode 3 has gone up in the rankings.
Yeah,
this is basically fourth place.
I think it's mine as well.
I think there's a lot going on before we get to the actual role play. Maybe I'm reading too much into this, but I think Jenny is trying to build rapport with the guests to kind of sort of outdo Alan a little bit. And I think she might have assumed that Izzy is either bi or gay and is trying to build rapport with her, because she keeps talking about how attractive she finds it when women have deeper voices. And there's also a bit where they're talking about what kind of situations can drama therapy help with. And she says marital strife, workplace disagreements and psychological trauma, to which I thought, that's Jenny, isn't it? So suddenly you notice Jenny become much more invested in this piece once she hears that it can help with basically all of the problems that she's currently having. I also thought it was kind of interesting when Simon pipes up with some sort of fairly intellectual comments, to which Alan just blusters over it going, it's all Greek to me, which is an absolutely classic thing for middle-aged men to say to cover their own thickness, isn't it? Like, anytime someone says something smart that you don't understand, it's all Greek to me.
But it's not that, though. He's stealing the punchline from Simon like he did with the stand at the back and ting. Simon said, hubris, nemesis, catharsis.
Oh, you thought he was Greek about words. To say it's all Greek to me?
Yeah.
Oh, right. I thought he was just quoting, just to quote it.
Knowing Simon, because he's always trying to put gags in, I think this is just the second time we're seeing Alan stealing the punchline off him before he gets to it.
I thought this was Simon just actually putting in a smart comment, and then Alan can't top it, so he just makes that joke. So Daniel and Louise are on the scene.
Yes, I think we should... So obviously Daniel and Louise are two actors... performing role play, but I do think we should just touch on the fact that Alan is an actor, an amateur actor, with the North Norfolk Players, where he played the Jack Nicholson role in A Few Good Men, which, I mean, based on the one line that he kind of he delivers, I would absolutely love to see that play. Also, if anyone, like, A Few Good Men, the play, is just a thing that doesn't make any sense, let alone being performed in Norfolk.
I also love that he puts himself on the same level as Jack Nicholson by saying that he was a tough act to follow, as if these are both equal status productions of A Few Good Men.
I'm surprised he managed to get that one over the line, because it was time goes by that he couldn't get the rights for to perform as the Norfolk play, and also that he managed to get a cast together, because again from the Oast House he couldn't get a good cast together, because obviously he is a terrible director and just generally awful. So I'm surprised he managed to get enough people to do A Few Good Men with him.
This is what I thought about when he's talking about North Norfolk players. I thought, well, then what's happened to Pear Tree Playhouse? Presumably, did he try and sort of splinter off from the North Norfolk players with his own thing, and then he's had to sort of come back tail between his legs, but at least he gets the Jack Nicholson role in A Few Good Men, the play.
So can we talk about Alan joining in with Daniel and Louise's scene?
Yes. To be fair to Daniel and Louise, they did get 8 sentences in before Alan decides to interrupt.
So he kind of like interjects, essentially, doesn't he? And then he's like, you know, you go for it. And so Daniel is kind of substituted out for Alan. And then you can kind of, I mean, I kind of saw what was happening coming away off, but I still thought it was brilliant and very, very funny.
What I'll say is, like, I'm not a huge fan of this section in general, but 2 things that I did like. 1, the bit where he's about to start and she says, don't overthink it, that's very funny. And also what basically transcends into all the things that he's ever wanted to say to Carol but never had the guts to actually say.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, he puts on a pretty ridiculous accent for one. He seems to have suddenly pitched himself as some kind of southern American.
Yeah. His opening line of like, hey baby girl, just been out on my bike, you know, and also the way he calls it motorcycling, like if you actually love bikes, you wouldn't say, you know, motorcycling's important to me. Love it.
It struck me that I think Alan is imagining himself as some kind of James Dean type rebel without a cause figure here. Yeah.
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 She's like, he comes in and goes, smells good. She goes, I was just spag bowl because didn't mean the dinner. It's just ridiculous. And what is also brilliant about that, hey baby girl, just been out my bike, motorcycling is important to me, is they cut to Simon and Simon's expression says more than I could ever sum up if I could talk for hours. Like, his expression is one of confusion, bafflement, and just probably enjoying watching this man dig his own grave.
I wonder how many of the lines that Alan uses have also appeared in the scripts for Swallow or Hannigan.
Yes.
Oh God, what's the full title for that again? I can never remember it.
A Glowering Glass Blows.
Blower This Way Comes.
Yeah.
That's it.
And then Izzy at this point basically has to step in and just go, probably just lose the accent and pretend it's your actual wife. So they just kind of sit down, and Alan basically apologizes for the fact that God didn't give his wife any talent, at which point Izzy steps in and says to stop, and Alan goes, that felt good.
I couldn't work out when she says, imagine it's your actual wife, whether he is now married and we just haven't heard about it. I guess probably not.
No.
But no. if not, then this is, he's imagining a conversation with Carol from Era Partridge. So presumably he was neglecting her to hang around the BBC. And that's where this kind of, this imagined conversation came from.
Enter Lynn?
Yes.
Enter Lynn.
I don't know about you guys, but I couldn't quite catch who she says has been done by the Inland Revenue, because obviously Alan says, it works.
It's Greville, Merchant.
Well done, Lynn.
It's Greville Merchant, who's referenced in series 1 of This Time with Alan Partridge in a very kind of passing way, a bit like we hear from Daryl Flench. I'd say he is filed under Daryl Flench, of a name that we repeatedly hear with very little detail about who he is. So it's like Greville Merchant, we don't know who he is. Daryl Flench, who is he? But these are names that are repeated throughout, so that's who she references.
So I feel like Daryl Flench is a lot more embedded. I know who that is in reference to Alan, but yeah, that's interesting though. Like, it's such a fleeting reference. I wonder.
Yeah, he's in This Time Series 1. Like that.
Yeah, so I wonder if something like that is that going to tie into a bit more of a story arc somewhere else down the line?
Could he become the new Pete Gabbitas?
Yeah, it is these names that you don't really know anything about, but they're just kind of repeated once a series, very fleetingly.
So we got a nice bit of interaction between Lynn and Jenny, which I don't, well, has never happened in any real way. It's only ever been sort of introductions before, where Lynn's calling Sam a big head, cocky, smarmy, and slippery. I quite like
Adam, and his eyes are too thin.
So, which is also nice because it's telling that she's obviously been discussing it with Alan, that they've got the same opinion about his eyes. And there's a sentence that she starts that is clearly supposed to go a different way, when she's like, I wouldn't worry, someday someone will, and I figured the natural ending of that line is, you know, sweep you off your feet or something sweet like that. But she's like, I wouldn't worry, someday someone will wipe the smile off his face. And I thought, that's so Lynn.
Well, I love that it's kind of, you know, how we refer to Lynn as being dark Lynn quite a lot in the first series. Now, in this series, I don't think we're quite getting the same thing. However, there are some nice kind of hints of her being quite streetwise and a bit threatening and a bit violent if needs be, which I think is quite funny, talking about like a snooker ball in a sock. And we also get the thing about her wringing the neck of an injured pheasant in a minute as well.
Yeah, who may turn out to have not been injured in the first place.
But I hadn't really thought about it until you were just saying, I guess we've never really seen Lynn and Jenny have like a long form conversation up until this point, I don't think. And I felt like, it feels to me like Jenny is genuinely keen to get Lynn's thoughts on Sam, to have a bit of a female perspective. And she's perhaps expecting a point of view that is going to be quite different to Alan's, because she obviously knows that Alan isn't a fan of Sam. So I'd imagine she was perhaps a bit wrong-footed by Lynn essentially having exactly the same views as Alan.
Little does she know, Partridge and Benfield speak with one voice.
Exactly.
I also like, I think the real gold in the pheasant story is that Lynn does the sign of the cross after wringing the pheasant's neck.
Yeah, and it was all over in under 10 seconds. So good.
I like to imagine in my mind the silence in the car journey as soon as she shut the door and they drove on again. So it's time to bring Sam Chatwin back into the mix, isn't it? A man who needs no introduction, Sam Chatwin.
A very sweaty Sam Chatwin there.
I love the pointed comments and the sort of passive aggression here. I think this is really cleverly done.
My favourite bit was just when towards the end when he just goes, wow, that's bollocks.
This is a nice point of unity for Alan and Jenny, because we know Alan hates Sam already. We know that Jenny's obviously not too enamoured with him at this point, so it's a rare moment where they can be united. So actually, Tom, has your predictor Partridge just come true?
Bum, bum, bum! It has.
Bombshell.
Yeah.
Good. And on that bombshell.
Thanks for pointing that out, because I hadn't spotted it.
It literally occurred to me right now as well, not even in my notes.
Brilliant. What do I win?
Nothing. Not even respect.
What I've always wanted.
There's a very nice end of episode callback here as well, when the link's over and Alan goes, a very sweaty Sam Chatwin there. Not sure whether that's because he was in Egypt or for some reason he was under pressure. And that's Queen song number 12. They've got the kidney machine.
The machine.
But what I like was, I'd forgotten about it by that point. I think when they were teeing it up earlier, I thought, we're going to get that 12th Queen song. I thought what would happen is Alan would interrupt the next link when he thought of a 12th Queen song.
Yes.
But once again, they've confounded our expectations. I'd forgotten that whole Queen thing was happening until this came in. And it reminded me a lot about the shuttlecock gag in series one, where you completely forget that there's a shuttlecock. And he's just like, oh, there's a shuttlecock up there. And that's the end of the episode, much like this is the end of this episode.
Yeah. So is it time to share our concluding thoughts then?
Yes, I mean, I enjoyed it again. I think this series has been consistently strong. I do agree that there is a tendency for the VT pieces to be a bit underwhelming. I like that they've mixed it up a little bit more. You don't have Ruth in every episode. You have a smattering of Lynn. Simon is kind of starting to get a bit more mobile as well. He's turning up on the sofa. He's not just confined to the digiwall, and his mistakes are getting a little bit more elaborate. So I really like the way it's developing, and I think this is basically more of a good thing.
Yeah, I would say that I really enjoyed this episode, and I kind of appreciate that probably episode three is maybe technically better in terms of its writing, but I think that final scene just really pipped it. For me, it's probably a bit stupid is not the word, it's probably just a dafter episode, but I like that, and I found this episode really, really enjoyable. Although I would echo, and I think we're on the same page of this as a group, the point around the VT, but otherwise very enjoyable.
I think daft is a very good word to use. This episode feels a little bit more absent from quote unquote reality. But obviously, you know, it perfectly believable in the APU. But yeah, I mean, I think I mentioned earlier, probably my least favourite of the series so far, but still loads to enjoy in it. Still lots of laughs. And yeah, really pleased and happy that the series is going at such a consistently good rate. And the quality of writing is just so good. Like the little nuances and little things that you know, don't necessarily spot first time round. I'm just really enjoying it. I love this universe that the Gibbons have built, and I love this idea and this concept. Like I say, even the VTs, whilst not hilarious, are still very, you know, they're not terrible. They're not, you know, completely void of laughs. But yeah, it's going great guns.
I think for me, I'm just kind of making the point in terms of enjoying this episode, probably the least of the four so far. And then probably the previous weeks being the worst two out of the four. I think I'm deliberately being quite harsh on it because, you know, broadly, yes, I'm really enjoying these shows. So I think it is just kind of, if I'm having to rank, well, what have I enjoyed more out of the four? But yeah, I think this one in particular, it just, I mean, it's an early call to make, but it's just didn't really feel like a classic to me. Like, I'm not sure how much of this is going to feel like memorable moments or memorable lines, whereas I think over the past few weeks I feel like we've already had sequences that feel like they're going to become like more memorable classic moments. And so yeah, even though I was a bit down on episode three, I'm definitely more down on this one. That particularly VT piece is not really working that well. However, the Lynn and Alan moments are absolute gold, and I do feel like this episode has probably done some quite important narrative work with Jenny and Sam splitting. So it'll be interesting to see if this builds a bond between Alan and Jenny further. So whether in the kind of narrative arc of the series, this is going to be quite a pivotal episode.
Super. So that's our thoughts on episode four. We'd of course love to know what you thought of it and whether you spotted anything that we didn't, whether you know a bit more about these Jewish women in this Putney basement. You can get in touch with us, leave a voice note on the Monkey Tennis hotline, 07923 600 017. On Instagram, we're at Monkey Tennis Pod. On Twitter, at The Partridge Pod. facebook.com/The Partridge Pod. Email us at thepartridgepod@gmail.com. or if you've enjoyed what you've heard for free and would like to drop us a donation, then please do ko-fi.com/monkeytennis. Anything that you could generously give helps us to keep making Monkey Tennis for years to come. We'll be back next week covering the penultimate episode of series two of This Time, but thanks so much for joining us on Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. Thanks and goodbye.
Wow, that was bollocks.
It's that time.
What time?
High time to say, if you've got time to give this time your time, then it's time to let this time spend time making your time a good time on This Time.
Monkey Tennis, please, please cook your eggs. Be safe. Be egg safe. Monkey Tennis?
Well, have a glass of water, please.
It falls to me to say he is gone.
Monkey Tennis?
I said I'd find out more. I haven't done that.
Pay for dinner, yeah?
Monkey Tennis?
I said, who the hell is that?
That's merely a shaved boy in a wig.
Monkey Tennis?
There is broad agreement that John was good. Tommy, join me at the lady.
The show that promises to be all things
to all men
and all women
and everything in between.
Monkey Tennis?
There's a subtle cock up there.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.